Now, more Paul Miller on Information 1380 WPHM.
It is 9:41 on this Tuesday morning. Think back a year ago, maybe just a little more than a year ago, end of 2015, early 2016, before we were talking about fake news and immigration and protests. We were talking about Making a Murderer. It was the Netflix sensation. People were watching it, in some cases, the whole series in one sitting. It was an addictive kind of a show about the murder case against Stephen Avery, who remains in prison today. He has exhausted all of his appeal attempts. The prosecutor did not look like a very good guy in this, and in his book, he has started it by saying, "My name is Ken Kratz. You may know me as the chief villain in the Netflix docuseries Making a Murderer." He's on the line with us right now to talk about his new book, Avery, The Case Against Stephen Avery and What Making a Murderer Gets Wrong. Ken, good morning, and thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks very much, Paul. Good to be here.
I bet as soon as you started watching this series, you said, "I got to write a book. I got to do something." Were you just jumping out of your skin watching this show on Netflix?
Well, I was throwing things at the TV, Paul, because what you were watching, what I was watching, just wasn't what happened in real life. And I was wondering, what trial is this? This wasn't the one I participated in.
Yeah, and yet they made it look like it was a very sympathetic case toward Stephen Avery. What was the biggest error in your regard?
Well, when you take 10 years and you pick and choose things, it isn't even so much the omissions. That is what they don't tell you. It isn't so much that Teresa Halbach, the victim, that her phone and PDA and her camera are found in Stephen Avery's burn barrel. Look, you were never told that. You were never told that the bullet that was found in the case matched up to the rifle hanging over his bed. You never find out that her tooth and her rivets from her jeans are found. You know, it kind of goes on and on. But the biggest problem with Making a Murderer is a editorial technique we call splicing. These filmmakers took an answer on a couple of different occasions that were given, and they spliced it or harvested that answer and put it to a question that was asked in a different place. When you take an answer and you purport it to be the answer to a question that was given that makes somebody look bad or makes them look sketchy, that's absolutely something no legitimate filmmaker would do. Could you imagine, Paul, if in an interview that you did, you took an answer that somebody gave and you spliced it to a different question? You'd be fired. What happened with these two, though, is they got an Emmy. They got an Emmy for creative editing, and that's the thing that makes this so hard to swallow. The deceptive editing has now become the gold standard for documentary editing and filmmaking, and that's got to be changed.
Isn't that something that you could call defamation of character? Couldn't you sue for that on those grounds?
Yeah, probably. I chose not to sue them. I chose to expose them instead and to write a book about it. The book that I wrote, Avery, took a long time to put together, not so much because I didn't know the case, but because I had to pick and choose what it was, which of the deceptive practices I was going to tell because there were so many of them.
All right, so let's start with the blood sample vials that appeared to have been tampered with.
Yeah, there's a vial of blood that's in the clerk's office that on Making a Murderer, it's their aha moment. What the other attorney says is a red letter day for the defense. What you are never told is that the hole in the top of the purple top tube is supposed to be there. We had a nurse who said, "I was the one who put the hole there." This is not an aha moment at all. How do you think the blood gets into a vial of blood? It's got to go in somewhere, and it goes in through that hole. The attorneys knew it. The filmmakers knew it when they suggested to the audience that it was obvious proof of tampering. It's just another example of how they deceived you.
What about poor little Brendan Dassey, this boy that happen to have a very high IQ, being bullied by the police that were trying to get him to confess to having a role in Teresa Halbach's murder?
Well, I've said a long time, Brendan Dassey's the real tragedy of this case, not so much by what he did, but because his uncle roped him into this and his family made him reject a plea offer. It's really tragic, and I go through that in the case. But what you don't also know is that he gave six statements to law enforcement, not just one. You're seeing snippets in one statement. You don't get to hear a narrative of the horrible things that he had done, his admissions to what he had done to Teresa Halbach with his uncle. And so when you take all of those statements in total, and when you realize that they didn't show you those for a very good reason, Brendan Dassey, I think, is a case, although tragic. Unfortunately, he was there. He helped, and he was rightfully convicted.
I got to ask you, Ken, once you left the prosecutor's office, didn't Stephen Avery actually, is this true? He contacted you and wanted you to take his case to defend him?
Yeah, Stephen Avery wanted me to be his appellate lawyer. Can you believe that? Before he hired Kathleen Zellner, he asked if I would take on his case. He wanted to make money with me in his case. I rejected, of course, that suggestion, but it just gets stranger and stranger.
Does indeed. I've heard that the makers of Making a Murderer are working on a sequel, essentially. Is that true? Do you know anything about that, and are you working with them at all?
I do. They asked me to participate. I haven't answered them, but I suspect I will be declining. I think that they're going to pick and choose again, that they're going to not be honest. Frankly, after this book and after the media starts asking them questions, because we've got the transcripts. We know that they spliced answers to questions that they shouldn't. We know that they really, really fooled everybody that watched this. So I'm not sure what kind of credibility they're going to have after this is all said and done.
Fascinating stuff. I wish we had more time, but Ken, we appreciate you joining us this morning. Thanks so much.
Thanks very much, Paul.
Take care. Bye-bye.